So we're actually going to talk today about how to be the kind of company that takes on business with all this in mind. They could be non-displaceable and get the earnings to keep providing great offerings while keeping the trusted capital they need to grow and do all that for generations to come. Welcome to Business Second Opinion Podcast. Today, we're examining four strategic thinking practices. Some are 100 years old, some only 50 years old, but most of them are outdated in a dynamic, outrageously competitive world dealing with climate change. And further, they leave your company susceptible to being displaced in the markets by upstarts, copycats, and undercutters. Today, start to assess where you are in the spectrum of options. But first, take a guess what I'm drinking. A Rebel Tasty Elixir. Reisha Chocolate. Reisha, the divine mushroom of immortality, with its legendary list of health benefits, is a traditional Asian herbal remedy. Over ice, it is the perfect summer refreshing drink. Rebel is not only a sponsor of our podcast, here on Business Second Opinion, they create righteous plant alchemy like this one I'm drinking right now, which means it's good for your body, your being, and for Mother Earth. They also go a step further to co-create a future without human trafficking. Rebel donates 2.5% of all net sales to Not For Sale. Through impact sourcing, they help communities to thrive and prevent their vulnerability to trafficking in the first place. Their rallying cry is, "We are Rebel."
We are so proud to be associated with them. Rebel and Not For Sale were named finalists in the Fast Company's 2019 World Changing Ideas Awards, recognizing their commitment to using business as a tool for positive impact in the world. Find out more about them at Rebel, REBBLE.co on their website.
Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. These are questions you may not know you need to be asking, but we believe you should. In the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you really want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout, and always with me is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So as our regular listeners will know by now, we invite people to send in questions or subjects they're wrestling with on business practices, and we select one to try to build a show around. As a thanks, we have also started sending them one of our Get a Second Opinion ceramic mugs. So we're building this episode, actually, off of one of them in particular that we thought might be interesting to the rest of our audience. So the subject was, quote, "What do the longest surviving or highest impact companies do?" So our listener goes on to explain the question a bit more. Quote, "When the space for ethical, great offerings gets clogged, simply focusing on sustainability or fair trade ideas does not seem to be enough. The good guys are at war for a limited customer niche," end quote.
Yeah, that's really a great question, which is why we agreed to take it on. I mean, as you know, I talk to CEOs daily, as well as folks who are offering investment capital through many different channels regularly. I ask them what they're kept up at night about, and they tell me that they worry about the longevity of their business or their investment, and particularly if you're trying to ramp up a business or get a good ramp of growth. They are juggling capital raises, product development, sales, and managing people who they feel responsible for.
And they all want to be the breakout business or to keep their hard-earned market position. But you don't get the runway to keep doing good things and making a difference if you can't create financial effectiveness.
It's really true. And I think we have some help here for those people who need to sleep better. Some ideas around being able to assess approaches and develop a more solid approach to strategy. One that's tried and true for decades. And the fun thing is, as those who listen to us today contest what we say with their own businesses, those they invest in, or others they see get some time in the limelight.
So we're actually going to talk today about how to be the kind of company that takes on business with all this in mind. They could be non-displaceable and get the earnings to keep providing great offerings while keeping the trusted capital they need to grow and do all that for generations to come.
I think I'd like to start with a bit of background on strategic thinking as an idea, as a way to think about how does a business guide itself through rough waters in today's world, and how that gets looked at over time. What do you think, Zach? When you look at steering a company, you've done some of that. We're talking about this as a way of comparing approaches by starting with what we have to achieve.
Yeah, so you and I have been talking about this. We said that it always assumes a great differentiating idea of some kind. But it turns out that this is actually not enough. First, you have to get everyone on the same page with that idea and focused around it, right? But in most places I've worked, that's a huge deal and really hard work because everyone's constantly distracted with this priority, this other thing, this idea, this customer, this strategy, right? And secondly, and simultaneously, markets are so crowded, you have to be seen and have a great market position or you get lost in the fray. And then finally, we thought execution is a good third reference point. I mean, actually delivering on the great idea by all the people into a market where advertising tries to show the difference, this is almost impossible because customers tend to see everything as the same.
Yeah, I like those three ideas, focus, positioning, and execution. But in order to use those, I'd like to offer four approaches, which we love doing often so people can see it through different paradigms that can be guiding businesses in strategic thinking and see how well they do on bringing about longevity in a dynamic market that gives them a non-displaceable position without trading off their values, trading off financial effectiveness or competitiveness. And then we will ask your three questions. How do they keep focus as they take action? How do they position themselves in a market? And how do they execute reliably on their plan and market position for each of those four approaches?
If people can see that in a company's leadership, they're likely able to predict who will be around in a few decades and where investors will actually want to join in, I think.
Okay, so let's start with the four approaches that are quite common, and I'll call the first strategic approach the continuous improvement strategy method, because we know that you cannot be static and survive. You have to continue to improve. This is what 85% of companies use, and as a result, have slow or no growth as a result. They're really tending to look backwards and trying to do better than they used to do.
It's pretty funny. This actually sounds like the last show we did on process improvement. And don't worry, we haven't forgotten about that. We know we still owe you all a part two on how to do process design so it promotes innovation and intelligence.
Yes, we have not forgotten. The second approach I'd like to offer is what I'm calling the more or less strategic approach. This is about doing more of what seems to work and less of what does not work in the market. So you're actually looking at outside and your effects. But this also includes assessing ecological and social impacts, because you're asking the question with this strategy approach, where could we do less harm, but along with not losing the position we have in the market, and how could we therefore help ecosystems be healthy and our market be healthy?
So this sounds a lot like sustainability and also positioning a business relative to competitors. Both keep us looking sideways, actually. It's this constantly looking to see what steps our competitors are taking that we may need to counter, or what practices we've learned that are giving us a better reduced footprint on land and communities. They seem like reasonable things to consider, but I still can't see the tactics necessary to get us to non-displaceability, Carol.
Well, you're right, because they are looking sideways. That's a good metaphor. And it has a lot of downsides is why you can't see it. It's like being in a race and pacing yourself with your competitors or doing less bad than you did last year based on some generic connections. So it is missing a lot. And we'll come back to that in a moment. The third approach to strategy is what might be called the lead the pack, or some people would say dominate the market. This is a much more active, even aggressive approach, believing we have therefore the best ideas and we can execute on them better than anyone else. You're still competing by pushing the boundaries, not looking exactly at what others are doing. You're trying to stay on top of trends, get out ahead with ideas for early adopters. The business has to have products that are enticing, and they have to not be just pursuing the lowest cost tactics. So these first three approaches of the idea of continuous improvement, more or less strategies, or dominating or leading the market are the three approaches which are most often recommended in Harvard Business Review. And I'll put some links to those in the notes. And Zach, you know what the last one is?
Yeah. So the fourth one comes from a regenerative paradigm. It is always based on essence of the business, which sets it apart at a core level and gives greater unique capacity to people to transform their lives and succeed on their own. So we actually call this express essence. What the essence of your business is the best place to start and continue.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It is the one thing that is the essence expression that when you are right on it, when you're on top of your game, that it is the place to work from. It gives much better results on all three of our reference points that you pointed out: focus, positioning, and execution. No one can beat you at that. And you can attract a loyal tribe to you because you know them so well that they feel like you're designing for them uniquely in your products and services. It's the most effective for gaining steady cash flow, great and fair margins on your offerings, and a community of stakeholders who ensure enduring earnings that you can reinvest for the evolution of your business and for the lives of your stakeholders.
Now, I know that some of our listeners may be thinking this sounds like fantasy at first, but it's actually more concrete and certain to pay off. So in the past couple of years, I've been reading about Adidas, who nearly lost its way. They actually decided to go back to its founding essence and reimagined their business from that place. And they decided to stop competing with Nike and turned away from chasing trends. And the results were a reinvigorated business that has its own unique place in a huge market. So they were founded actually on creating, quote, what is best for the athlete, unquote. And they did well for decades using strategy. So by going back to their founding essence, Adidas transformed itself from a generic competitor in the marketplace to a brand worth 10x with much higher margin offerings as Nike was losing its footing. And so you can actually see the link to a story in the show notes if you want.
And we should remind people that it was not about doing what they did at the beginning, but once they re-enlivened that sense of what was the heart of the business that set it apart, it gave them a way to invent and innovate from that with completely new ways of working. And in fact, Adidas isn't the only one. There are companies like Lego, Burberry, English Clothing Company, and Apple that have all lived through these phases of losing their founding essence or often ignoring it with a transition where their identity got blurred and their strategic focus got lost. But we all know the story. At some point, each company realized that it really had a distinctive history, rich with experience, rich with signature processes that could be used to design the future, not with a slavish adherence to tradition, but through thinking differently about strategy, innovation, and products. Through understanding its founding essence, they were able to re-enliven themselves. And they're good examples of how these businesses have lost their way and use essence to get back in touch with, especially after you've had a leadership transition.
So there's also this amazing seventh generation story. Seventh Generation is a company founded by Jeffrey Hollander. He took a 20-year-old company that had never taken off and started growing it by 35% annually to eventually 65% in revenue growth. In the retail world, that's actually unheard of. And all by working with you, Carol, revealing his essence and embedding it into everything. So didn't you actually tell me that their Regenerative Business Summit is focusing on this idea of revealing essence this year? And Jeffrey is actually going to be sharing some of his story virtually. Doesn't that relate to this?
Absolutely, it does relate to this. That summit, just to throw that out in case people are interested, is November 19th. It's a fusion of local and virtual where businesses come together in several different locations simultaneously and work in a workshop mode to organize their ability to make decisions and take actions based on this idea of essence expression. But most of the time, you know, we're operating in kind of an intuitive way with some of that, but it's not out front and center. But let's look a little bit more before we add just a little bit about the summit to the differences between these four strategy approaches, so it's clear why Essence gives you a non-displaceability in your market, which means that your business cannot be knocked out in the short term or the long term and has better financial effectiveness numbers. But you have to know how to find Essence and the design from it. Non-displaceability and financial effectiveness give a chance to do the real work of making a better world, because the business is not fighting against itself. Its market position is solid and its capital raises are easier to pitch.
Okay, so we suggested at the beginning of the show that the ability to focus, position offerings, and execute on strategy would be good guides for assessing a strategic thinking method. The continuous improvement method actually works on staying focused by being incremental and breaking things down into smaller and smaller parts, like a machine. So for positioning, they use a template that they've had for decades that's likely borrowed. And this will start to sound familiar to you because it all begins with considering things like, what niche or segment are we in? What's the time to get a product to market? And then focusing on adoption phases like early, middle, and late. So execution in this world is actually achieved by delegation, which means communication better be excellent with lots of supervision to close the gaps. And you know, it's funny, as I'm saying all this, I can already see how this limits anything related to using Essence while simultaneously undermining innovation. It's all about reliable replicability. To be sure, there's some advantage in this one in its simplicity, but it actually doesn't lead to non-displaceability. That, I think, is obvious here.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get back to showing our listeners how you can actually get those limited advantages, but to do it with inside the Essence Expression method that will then erase all those downsides. Let's go to the second one. The more or less strategy, we called it, keeps focus by assessing last year's results and forecasting sales for the coming year. They are focused on what they're currently doing and how it fits within the market around them. Now, that's pretty easy for workers to understand, and it does keep focus on what currently exists, but not on what could be and what they could offer as a result. The more or less strategy works on positioning in what might be called a relative competitive position. Like, where do we fit? As you said earlier, the business's eyes and all the people in it and their attention are sideways as they compare and pace themselves with others in the industry. This method does allow a business to extend its sustainability goals, but overall, the method is really a way to position the goals for sales and eco-impact based on what they and the market are currently doing. That's its biggest downfall. The execution in the more or less is directed by functional departments, with each having a considered best practice in the industry that they apply to management and sustainability. And again, they're looking sideways.
Yeah, I can actually see the challenges of this. Looking sideways cannot really drive you towards a non-displaceable business because there's so much being copied and augmented. And there are better ways to that one also, even with the advantages it has. So looking at the third strategy method, lead the market or industry you're in. In this method, focus comes from certifications and detailed plans that are usually customized. It's always about raising the bar or standards in the industry and for stakeholders, of course. Positioning, in this case, comes from a values framework and identifying with a purpose or mission statement. It's always more about collaboration and partnering with quote-unquote competitors. This is all meant to feel friendly and make things and sharing easier. Execution, our third dimension, is led from ecosystem awareness. People are drawn in as workers and customers. The business still has to have efficacy in products and innovation. They are the base upon which execution is actually built. There's also often teaming strategies for workplace involvement and contribution. Carol, what am I missing here?
Obviously, there are a lot of good things in that one, and much of that you don't want to have go away, but it's missing who the business is uniquely and often the ability to understand how financial effectiveness is integrated by redefining how we understand earnings, margins, and cash flow, that they are built into and are created in a different way with a regenerative philosophy. It's the most common complaint I get from the capital market investors who want to also have a social and planetary impact, but they fear people are always trading off stakeholders. Like, okay, we don't like those bad guys who were all greedy and we care about the ecosystem and society, but we trade off the idea that we should actually give a return so people can afford to invest in us. They want them not to make that trade-off, but make the system itself more whole. In fact, I know investors that really appreciate consciousness in a company, and they love our work because of this one point that it's about financial effectiveness, but it comes from a regenerative perspective and it's integrated.
But Carol, how do essence-based companies guide themselves?
Well, the focus here, which we're using our three criteria, right? Focus comes from a compelling corporate direction that's founded in the essence of the business. Now, we're going to give a head start on this at the summit. It's a bit of work to reveal essence, and it takes some special skills. We can't just teach them overnight, but we can give you a starting point of how to look at it at the summit. But mostly what we're going to do there is we're going to reignite that connection with the singular heart of the business, where everyone in the business can stay connected to it, and they can imbue it and embed it in every piece of work they do, from product development to hiring. It's not difficult to see why something is being done with a bit of engagement with people across the company, and they can grasp essence more quickly than they can the complicated numbers which are often presented, or the broken down fragments. And when you do that, when you do that engagement, it fosters more initiative, better evaluation of which path to take when I have choices to make.
So this sounds much better than grappling with pieces of a delegated plan. Plus, you get to learn to see the essence of your distributors, buyers, and how you can work with them for the business essence expression in a way that only you can do. You will never be displaced because no one else can be you. You will know that buyer user also so well that you'll feel you designed specifically for them.
Yeah, and now this is about positioning. We were talking about focusing, but what you just pointed to is what I would call an essence to essence connection with you and each unique buyer group. It can get all the way down to each unique customer if there's special work we need to do them, but most businesses have 4 to 6, not niches, not segments, but essence clustered groups. And that's my experience, at least after almost 45 years of doing this. Their execution then comes from a radically different way of organization to execute that engages everyone in personal and professional development for the entire time they're in the company. It's not a set of training here and there. It is an infrastructure built for that to keep happening. It stops all distraction. My experience is the internal politics go away, the miscommunication. I have not seen it fail.
And by the way, this includes education on how to reimagine financial effectiveness as everyone's role. This is really about how each person can see how they produce regenerative earnings, margins, and cash flow in every action every day, and how that comes from sticking to essence expression.
You know, another story, in case you need one, just to be able to see how this works, you know, my favorite way to do this is to think about our everyday lives. So if you have more than one child in your family, or you grew up in a family with multiple children, you can build your own example. If your child rearing strategy is continuous improvement, our first level, you tend to work on the shortfalls of a child based on what you think is right and how they should function. Therefore, there's a lot of punishment, reward, in order to seek to shape them.
And if you've taken on more or less strategy, you're comparing them to siblings and best practices of parenting that you actually learned. And third, if you lead the market using that strategy, you actually put pressure on kids to be top of their class, maybe to do good deeds as well.
Now, we probably all recognize one of these three earlier ones. Most of us were raised this way. Some children were lucky to have the essence expression strategy involved in how they were parented. And maybe you're even working on this, where each child is unique and has a clarified essence. You help them discover it, help you discover it, and you find education and opportunities to grow it to fuller potentiality. And because a unique voice is based on who they really are and what they see as their work in the world, we can help them in a very different way. And they're more likely to thrive early rather than wait till middle age to follow their dream. It seems crazy, but with living systems thinking, this is true of every being, including a business, which has a founder, by the way, and a living being with an essence to express, and they did it into a business. Now, we said earlier that we would show you how these all fit together. Just think about that if you are seeing the essence of everything and every customer and any city or community you're working in, that you now know what is the appropriate way and what it should be compared to. So you can go back to what you get from the comparison and getting kids and people to work to a higher standard, but you're working from how they think about it. It's coming through their essence. And the same thing is true if you want to do comparisons or follow trends or do work that's around sustainability. You're no longer doing it based on others' ideas, others' best practices, other competitive information. Instead, you're saying, what with this particular business or this particular child is it important to bring into when we compare so that we don't leave behind the potential of their essence and make it common, which is what happens in our second more or less strategy. And now we know what we want to do continuous improvement on, not something we're imposing on the child or imposing on the business or hiring somebody who comes in and does time and motion studies and tell us how to do continuous improvement. It is the business based on its essence is working to build the future.
So we want to take a minute to remind you all to join Carol and the Regenerative Business Alliance for the summit and learn how to bring this kind of thinking into your business. Or tell some businesses you know about it. They can even become a champion for the summit, create the gathering place and invitations for people to join and work on their businesses. Then you can attend for free. Go to www.theregenerativebusinesssummit.com to learn more, or send an email to carol@carolsanford.com.
And you can check our show notes at businesssecondopinion.com for the links to the Harvard Business Review articles I promised earlier and other articles we mentioned, like the Adidas story, that give you insight into how we're thinking and building what we share with you and how it is we can compare to this long-term, non-displaceable strategy.
And many thanks to Ethan Soloviev, the co-producer of the Regenerative Business Summit and research director at How Good, for suggesting this topic. We are going to be sending you a Get a Second Opinion mug, which holds 11 ounces of your favorite beverage. If you want one of our excellent Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your ideas. You can email carol@businesssecondopinion.com, or you can find us on Twitter @biz_second_opinion. We will send you one if we use it to develop an episode. Also, your ratings and reviews on any of our platforms, including now Spotify, actually help people find us and spread word. Also, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter so you can get connections to the show notes and much more.
And thanks to Numi Tea, they sponsor our show notes every time, but they're also one of the new local champions on the upcoming Regenerative Business Summit on November 19th. They'll be in the Bay Area. Check out the summit website, regenerativebusinesssummit.com, and you can learn how your essence can become a powerful decision-making guide to all in the effort to grow your business.
This has been Business Second Opinion.